right? It's hard to convince him to do any physics using his library. But so here's the developers, the Yunda is the main developer. I basically just write some make files and try to test things. And Paul Shong is a longtime collaborator. And Tama basically started us with this cross-platform installation package. So it's a CMake. We use CMake in our library. So which means that in principle, you can install it on all the platforms which CMake supports. Okay, and Suki wrote a MATLAB wrapper. So for one version of the Unit 10. Okay. So the ideas, I assume that people here are more or less exposed to this tensor network. Okay, but so basically the task of the day is just to try to contract this very complicated tensor network. Okay. So for people who are not familiar with tensor networks, I mean, this graphical representation can be a little bit hard to understand. So I'll just give you a brief introduction of this graphical representation. So we in this business, we basically represent this tensors as a symbol like that. So for this one, sometimes we call it matrix, because if you fix this, it looks like a matrix, okay? So that's a rank 3 tensor, but it's represented as a matrix in the MPS, matrix product state, okay? And all the internal legs are summed over, okay? And all these external legs are basically external indices. So in the MPS language, to get this expectation value of this sum operators, so this will be a bra, this will be a cat, and you want to take the expectation value, basically just sum over this network. Okay, so we want, I mean, in these tensor networks, we need to sometimes contract very complicated tensor networks. For example, this, if I do 2D Mera, this is can be a very complicated, okay? And so tensor contraction can be non-trivial, because if you want to start from scratch and you have to do the bookkeeping yourself, you have to bookkeep the tensor indices, and it's tedious, it's error prone, okay? And if you want to study fermions, okay, then you have to take care of this swapping of this fermion, and you have to take care of the signs, okay? It can be complicated, okay? And also you want to minimize the computation time and memory usage. Okay. Basically you want to find the best way to contract a tensor network, okay? And also one goal we have in mind is to speed up the computation, okay? And maybe we use these computer accelerators, for example, GPUs, okay, graphic processor unit, or this Intel Xeon Phi, kind of, okay? And so, but we want all these benefits, but without like very complicated the programming, okay? So we decided that somebody has to do the dirty work, and we took up the thing, okay? So for example, this is a tensor contraction. I have these two tensors that I want to contract, okay? And so here's my view of the current situation, okay? So we have this wonderful hardware, okay? And we build on top of that, you have some very low-level libraries, say BLAS, LAPACK, and if on GPU you have this CUDA library, and you have this CUBLAS, and you have this LAPACK routines, Magma, and some commercial ones. And currently, when people want to build their own tensor network applications, So you take your favorite programming language, and then you try to program it through program the you write your own code, okay, and you directly talk to these low-level libraries, okay, and or I think iTensor is somewhere here, okay, and so but. Translate a network, okay, to some very efficient code. It's not that easy, at least the current situation. Okay, so that's where I think we come in as a Unit 10. Okay, so basically the idea is that you talk to Unit 10, and some of this dirty work can be taken care of by the underlying library. Okay, so. So what's Unit 10? Okay, it's programming in C++. Okay, and from the beginning we had these tensor network algorithms in mind. We provide the so far we have this symmetric tensor class, and it only has a billion symmetries. So we have U1 and Z2 hard coded in. And so we have some auxiliary classes, which is to give you the quantum numbers and blocks and bounds. Okay, so I think a slight different from all the existing tensor libraries is that we have this network class. So basically, we can store the details of these graphical representations of the networks, and we can process them. Okay, and with this network class. We can build an engine, okay, to construct this and analyze the contraction tree for a given network. And so we devise a very simple but useful algorithm that choose to search for a binary contraction order, okay? And that can be based on these computational memory constraints. So we're still working on to provide wrappers. Okay, so I know that many people still program in MATLAB. So we'll provide wrappers such that you can take advantage of the speed of the library because it's a compiled library, but the ease of the programming, say in Python. Okay, and we also support the acceleration with. At least for NVIDIA CUDA-based GPU. And this library will be open sourced, okay? At least for the CPU part will be this open source with the LGPL license, okay? And we're working on a paper, so if you can cite us, that'll be nice. I can answer to my funding agencies. Okay. And so here is a brief summary of what's inside the Unit 10. So we have a unit tensor, okay, and so this basically gives you the what you have here. So normally you have a tensor network, okay. So you have a network like this. So here are the indices for these tensors, okay, and for each one of these tensors is a unit tensor, okay. And then you can specify the quantum numbers on the bound. You can take out a given quantum number and to do some operations on it. Okay. And so basically that's the idea. Okay. So let me give you a simple example. Okay. So let's take a spin-1 Heisenberg model, just two spins. So here, if you use this computational basis, local 1, 0, minus 1 basis, this will be the matrix element. Okay. And so we can assign this quantum numbers. Okay. So we can try to build a symmetric basis. Okay. So let's say if I want to have a U1 symmetry, okay, so I want to conserve total SZ, then my matrix will look like this, okay, and in this space, this is block diagonal, So the way to do it is basically we can specify the quantum numbers on this bound, okay? And then basically by specifying the quantum numbers, we can really build this symmetric basis, okay? And an advantage of using this symmetry is that we can minimize the computation time and memory usage, okay? So to do that, okay. So this is just basically just the code. This is the code sample, okay. So I can define several quantum numbers, which is 0, 1, -1. So I can give these quantum numbers to bounds, okay. So I can declare a tensor with these bounds, these quantum numbers, okay. And automatically, okay, if I add these elements, raw elements, will transform into a block. A diagonal tensor, okay, and then with this, then I can add labels to this bounds, so I can do a contraction. So all these operations are overloaded, okay. So the true contract to tensors is just a simple multiplication, okay. And so we have these operations. You can contract to tensors. And you can add two tensors. And an important thing is that you can permute and do a transpose. There'll be some I/O, some initialization. Okay. And for example, it's very common in this tensor network. You have to permute the indices. Okay. So we provide a very an easy way to permute the index. Okay. And so here's the symmetries that are supported. Another thing is that it's a fermions, okay? We know that when you swap two fermions, you get a minus sign, okay? And in an MPS, okay, this keep tracking of this sign is not that difficult, okay? But let's say you have a very complicated tensor network, okay, and then you have to be careful when you have this bounds crossing, and then which you have to take care of the signs, okay. So for example, if I have a tensor like this, okay, so here will be my matrix elements, okay. So so I have a parity even, parity odd, okay. But when I want to contract them, so if I want to contract these two tensors with a fermionic sign, okay, first I have to permute, which means that these two fermions will cross, and depends on the parity of the fermion, then you have to put a minus sign in certain cases, okay. In our library, okay, for the fermions, okay, you don't have to worry about this. All these permutations, because before I want to contract this, so I have to permute this to legs before I can do contraction. And all this has been taken care of, okay. And so we'll add basically just you add a swap gate, and the swap gate will decide where to put the minus sign. Okay, in when you permute. Okay, so in a sense, all you need to do is just you declare that okay, we're doing fermions, okay, and then the library will take care of this sign for you. And so this is so the matrix class, okay. So we decide to separate because we don't want to operate on the tensor data itself directly, okay. So we decided that we have a matrix class, okay. So basically, I can take out part of a tensor, okay, and do some analysis. For example, one of the most commonly used is to do a SVD, okay? You do a singular value decomposition, okay? So you can take out a block, according to your contour number, you can take out a block, do analysis, and put it back, okay? Okay, so I think the last thing is the I think, in my opinion, is a little bit different from all these existing tensor network libraries, okay? So we have a class called a network class, okay? So first, the way we specify a network is to generate a file like this, okay? So this is basically just I have a tensor called C, and these are just the labels, okay? So by writing this down, okay, and basically this just represents a tensor network like this, okay? For example, the repeated indices will be summed over, so the library will look at this and will know that these two are contracted, okay? So I generate a network, okay? And the next thing is I can just put in tensors. So I just add tensors, okay, according to these orders, okay? So I can put in tensors, okay? And now I have a network, and I have put in tensors in all this, I put the data of the tensor inside, then I want to contract this tensor, this network, okay? So there's a function which we call just a launch, okay? You do a launch, and then the tensor network will be contracted. Okay. And the good thing about separating this this network and the tensor is that it's easy to reuse whatever you have for the network, okay? So for example, I can just replace one of the tensor, okay, with a new tensor elements, and then do the calculation again, okay? So it'd be useful such that, okay, in the past, you probably need to store all these intermediate tensors and keep track of what are the indices. But here, it's basically reasonably easy. You just replace the existing tensor with a new one, okay? And also, this network class will also do something for you. For example, this is the network that I want to contract. And so the launch, what it does is that take this, okay, and then do build a binary contraction tree for you. And so let me go through this. Okay, depends on the structure of your tensor and the structure of your tensor network. There are certain contraction orders that will be favored. Okay, for example, so before we talk about the specifics, okay, let's just look at a very simple example. Okay, so here is a tensor network of three tensors, and I want to contract them, so I want to sum over these internal indices. So by a naive summation, okay, my cost will be just all these indices multiplication of all these indices, product of these all indices, okay? But if I do a pairwise contraction, okay, so say, if I do B and C first, okay, and then do A, so the cost will be this plus this, okay? So the pairwise contraction is better if these numbers are less than one, okay? And can be easily reached less than one, if R, A and M are larger than two, okay? So the pairwise contraction is actually better than doing a direct sum, okay? But the catch is that if you want to do a pairwise contraction, then you will have a intermediate tensor, okay? And this will cost you memory storage. So there are different ways to contract this, to build this binary contraction tree. And there will be a space cost to store the intermediate tensor. Okay, so in this paper, Rob Pfeiffer did an analysis. Okay, so there's some algorithm that you can try to find the best contraction order. Okay, but this the algorithm to find this contraction order can be very expensive. Okay, so we decided that we want to use a heuristic approach. Okay. So this is won't be optimal, okay? But if we know some, we can give some guess for the order that I want to contract, okay? So this is pretty good approach. So let's assume that all these external A, B, C are the same, okay? So we just need to compare this, okay? We define in our program an efficiency factor, okay? So basically, the idea is very simple. I want to reduce as much as the number of elements, okay? So if I can get this, this number of elements, okay, this efficiency factor as large as possible, then I get a huge reduction, okay, in the number of elements, okay. So basically, I just want to contract the tensors with the largest as many legs as possible, okay? So I can reduce the number of elements that I have to store, okay? So and as I mentioned, that to really find the optimal order is an NP-hard problem, okay? But if you know some kind of order, okay, so you can suggest, okay, to the program that, so maybe you should try to contract this in this order, okay, but the contraction engine will based on this and try to find a better contraction order, okay. So here is how this simple diagram says how we build this contraction tree, okay. And so,
do you have a publication on the algorithm?
Or no, not yet. Okay. Yes.
And if you don't care about this because it's a small tree, a small tensor network that you need to contract 2,000 times, and you don't want the code, the program to continuously check whether it's optimal or not, can you just?
Yes, you can. You can specify
that you don't want.
Yes. Yes.
An alternative to what you are proposing.
Yes. So, okay, and the good thing is that you just check it once, because when you build a network and you need to specify what's the bound dimensions for your network, okay? So this will be just done once, okay? And, okay, so this is, so if you really want the program to contract it in certain order, so you can add these brackets. Okay, so then this basically tells the program that contract A, B first, and then C, and then E, and then DF. DF contract first, and then you contract both of them. So you can specify what you want to do. Okay. So let me.
That bump that you showed earlier with the factorial in there, that includes also nonsensical things, right? If you have a large tensor network and there's a tensor here and a tensor there and they're not connected at all, then you would contract them anyway. I mean, you
right.
can do that.
Right.
That's clearly something that you wouldn't do, right? You would only
right.
contract
right.
neighboring tensors.
Right.
So that bound that you showed with factorial, the realistic bound should be much smaller.
Yes. Yes. So. I think so. I just checked today. I think Rob has a latest version. Okay, because I think quantum chemistry people think a lot on this how to contract these tensors. Okay, there's a tensor contraction engine. Okay, but I look at the source code, but I couldn't really understand what they were trying to do. Okay, but in general, I mean, this is a I think depends on the structure of your network. I think it's important. It depends on the structure of the network. And if you can take advantage of the structure of the network, then you can basically reach a better contraction. Okay.
But this still assumes a serial evaluation of the network.
Yes.
Because in a modern multi-core machine, if the blocks are small, it may make sense to have two tensor multiplications at the same
right.
time. For example, in your case, AB and DF
right.
could be evaluated at
right.
the same time on different sockets. Of
right.
The
right, right, right. Okay, so let me just skip this. Okay, so one thing which has been taken care of by the library is that so for fermions, okay, the contraction order is important because of this assigned structure, but the contraction order might not be the same order as the optimal contraction order. So computational costs can be reduced. Say if I this is the contraction order I want to contract C, D, A, B, E, F in this order, okay, but I know that the optimal contraction order is to contract AB first and CD by this contraction tree. Okay, so you need to swap some of the tensors, which will give you the right fermion sign structure. Okay, so this is also taken care of by our library. So basically, all you need to do is just that. This order will be the generated sign structure. So this launch will respect the sign produced by this order. Okay, but the internally will build a contraction tree, which is will speed up the computation. Okay, so let me show you a success story. Okay. So this is what is called a corner transfer matrix. Okay, all these corners these are the corner transfer matrix. So, but this is basically just one tensor network I want to contract. Okay, and the physical meaning of this is basically just to calculate the expectation value of some operator. So. We can try to build a network, okay, by doing this, okay. So unfortunately, we don't have a tool to generate this from the graph to the indices, but that's I've been thinking about. Okay, so you still have to draw a diagram and specify the indices, and then write down this, okay. And so if I just naively okay, do a binary contraction. Okay, so I just take C1, C2, and then contract and then C4. So this will be the contraction tree. So the maximum tensor, okay, will be the largest intermediate tensor that's been generated. You have 10 bonds, okay, and this is the number of elements. But so this is what been done, I mean, by people, okay, and so we take this and run it through our program. Okay. So this is a, so using the suggestion, okay, so we find that a slightly balanced the tree. So, and let's just compare what's been. So previously, you have a maximum tensor with that many elements. Now we have a slightly smaller smaller tensor, okay? But the important thing is that the memory requirement, okay? So the memory requirement is that you have to store the largest tensor and the product of the before contraction, okay? So it'll be a sum of this, okay? So the maximum, the memory requirement is reduced by a factor of 5, okay, more or less. And the total memory usage is reduced by a factor of 3, okay? And this is basically just a, this is not extensive search, which is you throw in some gas, and the, using this a very simple criterion, we just guess this, okay? And so basically what we did by using this this library is that we can reduce the scaling of the total memory usage. Okay, initially that contraction order give you a chi to the eighth, okay, and now we can reduce it to chi to a seventh, okay, which means that with the same machine, okay, with the same amount of memory, we can do a larger bound dimension. Okay, maybe I'll skip this. Okay, so this is how you program it. Okay, so if I want to contract this tensor network to this. So I just specify the, okay, so I'll be quick on this. Okay. So I just specify the quantum numbers, the bounds, okay? Okay. And then I just call a launch, okay? And then this is a network file that I have to read in, okay? So in principle, you can do this with less than 100 lines of C++ code. And a lot of lines are these pushbacks because we use vector. Okay. So you, in the future, we'll write a wrapper so it make it easy that you just throw in a bunch of this.
Actually, there is a newer syntax in C++ 11. Uh-huh. Just use the curly brace. After the
text, and then you specify the things. Uh-huh. Okay.
Should be quite simple.
Yeah. So another thing that we build is that we use we have some GPU support, okay, and from our experience, we can get as much as around like 40 times faster. Okay, so the idea is simple because you have this tensor contraction, which is computational intensive. And so you move to an accelerator, which is this GPU. Okay. So the animation is a little bit slow. Okay. So you move the tensors up to GPU, and you contract them, and you move the results back. Okay. And it looks simple this way, but it turns out that this communication is the tricky part. It's you basically all these applications are basically memory bound. Okay, you're bound by the bus of the memory, the speed. Okay, so what we did is that you can switch from CPU to GPU without changing any your functions. Okay, so this slide, I just want to tell you that GPU programming is, at least CUDA programming, is non-trivial. Okay, so you have to worry about the memory hierarchy. You have to worry about the communication between CPU, GPUs, and how they work. Okay, so we will do the dirty work for you. Okay, and so here are some results. Okay, so because we've been significantly written the library, so we only have a very few test results. Okay, so this is ITBD, and so we can This is a 1D ITBD. Okay, so we can get at least depends on the bond dimension. We can get say 15 to 18 times faster acceleration. Okay, but this is just MPS, so you don't really get much from this.
It's just parallelism over the quantum number of blocks.
So this is some old result. Okay, so this is a 1D mirror translation invariant 1D mirror. So we can reach about 28 times faster. Okay, and this is the old version of the GPU and old version of the code. Okay, so we expect with the new version should be at least 40 plus. Okay, and this in the future will be just, you don't have to worry about how to program GPU with one directive in your code, and you should be able to turn this on. Okay, so so here is a summary of the library, and as you can see that we have only five people. Actually, we have only one person spend much of his time working on it. Okay, but we welcome more users and testers, okay, and developers. And so let me summarize. Okay, so this library is geared toward tensor network algorithms, and the goal is actually to reduce development time in coding. Okay, so anybody coded a tensor network algorithm knows it's non-trivial, okay, and sometimes it's non-trivial to debug, okay, and also we hope that we can provide behind-the-scene optimization for you just based on the library, okay, and we're working on to support Python, okay, and MATLAB, and there are to-do lists. We're thinking about, we haven't done this yet. But it would be nice that I can just draw the diagrams and make connections. And then I can generate a file, which can be used for the library. Okay. And another important aspect is to support non-abelian symmetries, for example, SU2, okay, which will be very useful in real-life applications. Okay. So another thing is that we need to go another level of parallelization, okay, and maybe that we can combine our library with the knowledge in from say quantum chemistry to do this to search for this a better contraction order, okay, yeah. So that's it. Thank you.
Curious about some more details of mm-hmm. Say like that lower level part when you put the labels on the tensor, so mm-hmm. it's now kind of stamped onto the tensor, like restored in the tensor somewhere, like when you had said add label and mm-hmm. then later you have to permute it or something like that, is that mm-hmm. how that works?
So So, for example, we specify the labels, okay, at this level, okay. But there's an API that you can do it at a later time. But if you do it, you assign the label yourself. I think the advantage is that you need to call these contractions by yourself. Okay. But normally what we do is we basically just write on this.
I see.
Okay.
So
and
with this interface, you're saying, like that's
right.
Kind of a different interface.
Right.
Okay. But then when you feed the tensors into this network mm-hmm. class, do they have to already be somewhat like prepared with the right order of like rows and columns to match some of the details of this network? Like they have to kind of fit this pattern?
Yes. Yes. So okay, so you can see that we here you have a semicolon, and the ratio just tells you which one is we call it inbound and outbound. Okay, but that's sort of just to specify how we store the tensor in the memory.
I know some functions with quantum numbers and bonds and so on. You can, I think, combine quantum numbers or combine bonds or something. What exactly does that do?
Okay. So the So the quantum numbers, okay. So the quantum number class basically has some operation for these quantum numbers. So you can add quantum numbers. So you can do the same thing on the same bound, but you can say there will be some. So this class there will be some operation. So for example, U1 is easy. So you have a charge Q1 plus Q2 give you Q3, for example, something like that. But if you have SU2 or non-Boolean symmetry, then this can be some very complicated fusion rule. Okay. So this Q number basically just take care of this this fusion of these quantum numbers. So you attach a bound. So bounds basically just this thing, and you can decide how many quantum numbers you want on this. So each quantum number basically just one line, underlying line. Okay. And then all these operations are taken care of by this quantum number. Okay.
But what about like the additional, you know, degeneracy that you could have, you know, multiple settings of that bond that all have the number zero, say, or something like that? Like, where do you say that?
There's a degeneracy.
Is that just not specified at this point or something? You don't say it yet.
In this case.
Asking what the dimension of
say Q0 is? Yeah. Okay. So at this level, it's not specified. Okay. But when you do this, then I think, if I remember correctly, there's some way that you can look at the degeneracy of this Q0. Okay, so basically, I think here just give you the quantum numbers, and I know the bounds. But then, if I look at tensor for a given quantum number, then I can count the degeneracy. So there's an API on.
How did you decide? How do you input this information? About the degeneracy of anything. Suppose you are creating a tensor.
Mm-hmm.
Then what I see here is that you would use this qnum to specify define some second specified particle numbers. But how would, in which place would you specify the degeneracy of these particle numbers? I'm sure they do it somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember on top of my head, but
because raw here is simply just a plain matrix of numbers.
Right. So this is one way to add a, but you can start from directly from a. I have to look up the application interface documentation.
Are those was really curly braces? I was just curious about that square bracket. I mean, I didn't know if that was a C++ trick. I didn't know or something. Square brackets.
I think this is just to make a explanation clear. So basically, you have to specify a vector.
Yeah.
So basically, what we normally do is so I think the code is here. It's not really in a C++. Where's my code? Okay. Oh, okay. So, So you can specify the parities and. And
so
you have to.
Yes. Okay, I see. You got it. Right. So, like in C++11, you could put curly braces.
Right.
Okay. are you guys thinking of adding like support to make the networks in code in the line like, in the same file, like in the same kind of, you know, like inside the code instead of in a separate file or something?
I think the issue is that how so all the information is read in and stored in the memory. So in this network class, and we can save it in some binary form.
Yeah, so I mean, in practice, is it not really, it's actually convenient to have it in separate files? Does it turn out to be?
Right, I think yes.
Okay.
Because it's easy to keep track of, so you don't have to hard code anything inside your library. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, it's easy for human to keep track which one is connected to which. So if I have this file, then I can go back and reconstruct the tensor network. Okay. Yeah. But I think the important thing is that if I have a GUI interface, then I can just say I want to draw this this tensor network. Because as you can see, a lot of these indices are redundant. These are internal indices are basically sum over. Okay. But to write down this this network file, I still have to specify them because that network file is based on tensors because I need to know how to put in the tensors. But it'd be nice that I can generate this network file. I just specify this external legs and all these internal legs. I mean, labels can be.
It would just be a line.
Right.
Maybe up to the computer to figure out a number for that line.
Right. But I still think separating this into a separate file is probably a good idea.
So who is using this library at the moment? I mean, it was launched recently, right?
Mm-hmm. It's only us because, well, we're writing some applications because there's some tricks, especially for the symmetric part, how to say, construct a Hamiltonian can be tricky. Okay, it's not as straightforward as this. Depends on if you're very, very complicated. How do you do tensor product? Okay, and then so we're writing some simple applications and some templates so people can just take them and use them. But currently, only us. Yes.
But then there is, well, as you know, there is all these people using MATLAB.
Right.
I've seen the first version of the wrapper. It's
yes.
Looking okay, but
yeah,
would be good to have.
Yes, I know. It's on the list. After we were done with the Python wrapper, and then because I think MATLAB wrapper, as I told you, is a little bit specialized, and it's a lot of tedious work because you have to write a C++ file for each function. So
what about, I'm sure that in the quantum chemistry community, there are standards of how to, at the lowest level, how to store data. Is there a format? Can you tell us about this? Or is there a standard way of writing?
Tensors? The ordering of the elements or something? Or do you mean
is there equivalent of loss, right? So you mentioned the other day that you were working towards establishing equivalent of loss, but for tensors, not for matrices.
Yeah.
Would it make sense to agree on some basics so that all these different libraries would start from the same, would have a same starting point?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, some of the stuff in the standard that we're talking about is not so much just about like storage of elements, but it's more about like kind of basic functionality that someone would have. Like a tensor would be able to tell you its rank and give you access to it to like the location and memory of where its data is stored. So these are some
that was without symmetry, right?
Yeah, so this is just because that's the simplest case to even begin standardizing. The symmetry is that, you know, it gets much more, there's a lot more maybe matters of taste that come in or something, subjective things.
I guess it would be fruitful if different developers can agree on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because that was another question I had is there like a dense tensor class somehow, even like a lower level class, or does it start pretty much with symmetric tensors and go up?
Okay, so it starts with a symmetric tensor.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess below that you have kind of this matrix, but at that point it's not really a tensor.
No, this is basically just because all the contractions is done by this unit tensor level. This matrix class is just we want to take out some blocks, okay, in the matrix language that to do analysis. Okay, for example, if I want to do MERA, then I take the different symmetric sectors and do SVD and try to update the elements.
Yeah. Then that's the question, right? So suppose I'm dealing with a Hamiltonian that has no obvious symmetries, or I just don't want
to express
this. How do I go about this?
So basically just don't specify anything. You don't specify a quantum number, then it's automatically a non-symmetric tensor.
So it works for that sense.
But then there is some small amount of overhead then that's sort of being carried through, that sort of they are ready to deal with symmetries, but it's not sort of merely being used or something, right?
Yeah. So you have extra storage, but basically you don't have these quantum numbers, okay? So that part of storage is and then
so you have some like default initialized vectors,
things like
that internally,
right.
Some additional maybe logic and some stuff that's sort
right,
of
right. So basically what we do to optimize is we check if you don't specify symmetry, then we can do something faster.
Yeah.
Excellent. So Inger will be here. If there are no more questions, Inger will be here until the end of the week.
Well,
Friday you are
Friday I'll be in Mac in Toronto.
Okay, so you're here tomorrow and the day after?
Right.
Till Thursday?
Yes. And if you're interested, well, I didn't flash this. So we have a website and we have reasonably complete documentation and examples on here.
I've sent it.
So you can check it out. I mean, the website template is a little bit sucks. So.
All right. Let's thank Inger.
All right.